even more successful now. We'll get into that. But yeah, we're here to kind of update your career and what's happened since, and some really exciting news from the past season. So Nathan has just been crowned the world champion for men's T1 individual time trial, and that's not national, that's world, that's international. So Nathan is now a UCI champ. You've got the rainbow jersey and everything.
Yeah, it's quite a feeling. It was an incredible experience and an incredible journey. I remember talking back last time we were here in the fall and just sharing dreams, sharing goals, but also when those goals are just goals and then they become reality is a completely different situation. So just being able to have the support of the coaches, staff around me has really meant a lot in getting to that place to be able to win a rainbow jersey.
Yeah, the rainbow jersey is just so coveted, and I can't believe I know someone that has one. I'm, like, never going to shut up about that. So for anyone who isn't a cycling nerd, I am a cycling nerd, Nicole. I am a cycling nerd. The rainbow jersey is just a signifier of, like, elite-level cycling. Like, you're really the cream of the crop. So world championships this year were in Glasgow. They were in Scotland. How was cycling in Scotland? Did you see any fun animals?
Saw a ton of fun animals. Overall, just the hospitality of everyone in Dumfries. We were located a little south of Glasgow where a lot of the main events were going on. So we were in a smaller town called Dumfries, Scotland. And in the town, we would race in the city center, but also we'd go out into the countryside. So there'd be a lot of Highland cows there, a lot of goats and sheep and all fun animals. So it was quite the scene and quite the setting for the racing and for training.
Awesome. I think that's like one of the best parts about being an elite level athlete is just being able to travel the world and see so many cool places. So you won the men's T1 category. So in para sports, there's different categories. There's T1, T2, and T3, right?
Right now, just in the trike, there's just T1 and T2 at the moment.
Okay. So everyone you raced in your category was on a trike.
Yep.
Yeah, Nathan also is like the sickest trike ever. It's a carbon fiber Argon 18 trike. I have satin on it. It was a little scary, I won't lie, mostly because it was too big for me. But it's a pretty sick whip.
Yeah, so it's a really cool bike, and it's amazing just the kind of engineering and mechanical minds that went into building something like that. And it's really exciting to see that not just for me, but there's so many other bikes out there like Scott and other companies that are really working on building trikes for other athletes around the world as well.
Yeah, I think so you only have power output really in your right side of your body, right?
Yes.
So I need you to think about how cycling, and when I say you, I mean the audience listening right now, about how cycling is like primarily a very like, it's a sport that really depends on equilibrium. So think about how they would have to like engineer a trike to be able to go straight with power output really only from one side of the cyclist's body.
It's quite a tricky thing, and especially learning the trike in the first place is a very daunting experience.
Yeah.
I know most people who I've let onto the trike have that moment of fear, and you hear a little scream come out when they start moving on the trike for the first time. Just because it's a completely different style of riding. It's all about shifting the body weight dependent on where you are, where you're going on the road. So there's a lot more of body placement coming into hand, and especially when you add in a side of the body that doesn't work. It's a very interesting and tricky game to really learn and be able to develop the skills to take on the roads.
Yeah, watching cornering.
Yeah, cornering
is pretty scary.
Cornering can be fun. There are scary points to it, but overall you learn the skills and you learn to develop those skills even better so you can take those turns more confidently and have a little higher level of risk when you're going around them.
So let's talk a little bit about your race. So I saw some details about your race, and it said that you rode over 30 kilometers an hour in speed for over 10.8 kilometers, which is a really impressive feat for a cyclist on their own. Like I do a little bit of racing myself, but the racing I do is like draft based racing, and yours isn't. Yours is time trial, so it's very individual. And like my races are, I think if I was just doing a time trial alone, I would like barely be able to hold on to 30 kilometers an hour. So yeah, you went fast. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Did you have like a goal wattage in mind?
I had a gold target where throughout the year I've had some struggles finding the proper watts with my power meter I have on my bike. Mm-hmm. But mostly my target throughout the race was just to work the way through, because the first 5 kilometers were all on a false flat or like a little bit of a hill going up the whole way. So you'd be climbing for the first 5 kilometers and change. So it's really just maintaining a solid cadence, solid power, but also just holding the speed that I believed that was going to put me in a position when I got into that second half of the race.
Yeah.
I'd be able to really bring it home and contend for that gold. But throughout, as the race started, and in most cases, even during the warm-ups, if I have a bad warm-up, that usually means I'm going to have a good race, as weird as that sounds. And as funny as that sounds, so my body was not feeling great in the warm-up. So I knew, okay, things are going to go hopefully well come the time trial. But as soon as the time trial got going and I was in the town, there was this little roundabout going around 40 kilometers an hour, going around a roundabout on my affected side. I started to feel I got up on two wheels and it's okay. This is a little crazy now. But I was able to settle in and really try to develop a rhythm, although the first half I kind of struggled. But as soon as we got to the intermediate time, my coach, Phil Abbott, who's usually a very quiet guy, started really yelling in my ear.
You had a radio.
I had a radio.
You had a race radio.
I had a race radio in my ear.
Yeah.
And he started to get a little more vocal.
Yeah.
But at this point, my head's so dialed in and wired in on the race, I'm not really like figuring out what's actually going on. I just hear him yelling. I'm like, okay, I got to go faster. But I don't know why. Fully till I looked at the results after the race, and coming into the intermediate, I was 8 seconds off first. And somehow from the intermediate point to the finish, I was able to gain 15 seconds and take a 7-second lead.
I think it's so interesting. I mean, like, talking to you specifically, and this isn't like specific to para athletes, this is kind of just like an athlete thing, but I feel like I don't really hear too much from athletes about like the chaos that happens in your head. Like, I feel like you're very open about like the mistakes that you feel like you may have made during a race, or the panic or the stress, which I've like 100% felt during my races, but I don't feel like I talk to people about it after. So it's interesting how you kind of just mentioned that, like, you like went up on two wheels and you were like, okay, like this is a blip in the race, but You didn't really let it define your race.
It's really like anything. Work, sports, you're going to have moments of everything's in the balance, but it's finding that steadiness through the storm that's really going to help guide you to your goal. And there's going to be moments throughout, especially for me in cycling, where I have an affected part of my body that I don't like to say is a weakness, but is a part of the race where I really have to play my position right to excel.
Mm-hmm.
And it could really hurt me if I don't play my situations right. So there's always that alertness.
Yeah.
And there'll be moments throughout the race where it becomes challenging for me to corner or be on a little slanted road, or dependent on what's going on.
Yeah.
I really have to rise above it, and there's gonna be moments where you're gonna make mistakes, but that's growing and that's learning as an athlete too. And it's great to, whether you win or whether you lose, to look at those moments you can improve on and really just keep building as you go forward.
Is this your first international level race?
This was
for cycling
this was my first full season with the national team. I was fortunate enough in 2022 to do one World Cup event and race at World Championships. So this is my second World Championships.
Yeah.
And I believe my fifth international race.
Wow. And you've come away with a title, an international title. I don't know. There's just so much more weight when you say international title over national. Like, I think, I don't even know what it's like for you, but like, being a little selfish here, it hasn't set in for me that you have an international title. Like, that is really insane. And I just feel like the last time I spoke to you, you were talking very aspirationally about a lot of these goals. And in the span of less than a year, like, you've achieved them. Do you feel like your mindset has changed a lot from the last time we talked until now? Because I know the last time we spoke, you were very like, oh, like, I'm really trying not to mentally burn out. I'm just trying to like trust the process, stick to the plan, and not push myself the way I did with swimming. Like, do you feel like you stuck true to that?
I feel like there's a battle always going on within me where the athlete in me wants to go to my limits day after day after day, and it's finding that, or trying to find that balance, is the number one thing that's going to be so important, especially throughout the 2021 and 2022 season. I battled with a lot of injuries, and fortunately for me in 2023, I battled with very little to no real health concerns, and I felt that that allowed me to make my way throughout the year and continue to build that confidence. But with the mindset and the mentality of where I'm at now, it's not really changed too much.
Okay.
There's still that hunger and that want to reach that next level and find that next level, because I really understand for most athletes or most people trying to learn or grow, there's always areas you can improve on, and you're nowhere near your best self till you just push to the fullest extent. And I feel I'm very early in my cycling journey, and there's so much more I have to learn and I have to grow to really reach, hopefully, my potential at the end of the day.
I think it's really interesting because you, how long have you been like a professional athlete? Very long time.
I've been lucky. This was my first full season with the national team in cycling, but I have experience in swimming in the past. So for me, it feels like I'm a rookie again, just going through the process of being a first timer and really developing new skills.
I just think it's really interesting because I feel like someone finishes a sport career and they look back and they see all the mistakes they've made and they understand that those were necessary to get to the point that they finished at. But you had a really unique opportunity in the sense that you kind of did get to do it all again. And you were much younger when you started swimming, and we've talked a little bit about how that like youth mentality, that like go-getter, that feeling that you're invincible kind of inhibited you from actually letting yourself recover and do well. But now you're a little older with cycling, you're a rookie again. Do you feel like that you have kind of taken the lessons that you learned from swimming and applied them?
I hope. I'm still learning at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing is, for me, coaches will definitely agree that there's times where I have to be read the riot act of I need to rest, I need to recover, because I'm just going to push myself into a hole I can't get out of.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of the lessons I've learned in swimming have transferred over into cycling, and there's a lot more of a balance and a lot more of a self-care and a real support going on, because as you and I have talked about off the radio is it's so important in a sport like cycling to take care of yourself mentally and physically, because when you're on a ride for 2, 3, 4 hours in the middle of nowhere,
head down, doing the work,
you could just really beat up on yourself in those moments, and you have to almost take that step back and really make sure that you're supporting yourself. You're really being in a positive mind space, or that bike ride is going to be 2-3 hours long, but it's going to feel like 10 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. I think cycling, running, swimming, endurance sports, triathlon, they're very interesting in the sense that it's less about, there's an aspect of pushing yourself, and then there's the aspect of tolerating pain and being able to ignore pain. And like, I've absolutely been there cycling. I get dropped in a race, I get spat out the back, and I'm just doing a time trial alone, and all the intrusive thoughts start kicking in. Like, there's a need to be able to evaluate how you're doing and accept that you're in pain, but not push that pain.
Yeah,
and that it's like a very like weird thing to explain that I think you can only really understand when you've been cycling for 3 hours and you've already thrown up twice. But I was like lucky enough to see you at some local races in the lower mainland. I ran into Nathan at a few crit races, and obviously Nathan raced Cat 1 and absolutely smoked everyone. How do you feel like the para community kind of compares to the non-paracycling community?
I feel I've been very lucky in Vancouver to have been treated so great by so many different cyclists throughout the community, at different shops, different cycling cafes, and just riders I meet along the road, and had so many deep, powerful conversations that I really feel that with the national team squad we have in for Canada, we have a good mix of athletes, young and old, where I'm actually one of the youngest athletes on the team.
Yeah, cycling is one of those sports where you can kind of really push yourself past 30.
Yeah, and so there's a great level of maturity on the national team, mm-hmm. and a real camaraderie there too. But I also feel that way about the city of Vancouver, where I've been able to have so many deep connections with different mm-hmm. riders, and I feel that, at least for me, I'm very fortunate to be in a city like Vancouver that has such a strong framework for cycling, but yeah. also it's very small that everyone feels like family at the end of the day.
Yeah, I just finished my first season racing, and I absolutely feel the same way. And I know my experience is a little bit different than yours, but as like a new, young person of color in racing, like I've felt this sense of like acceptance that I don't think I've ever really experienced in any other sport. And not just acceptance, but like people were like, we want you to be here, we want other people like you to be here. And it's just been this like very wonderful thing, especially because we both have had, both Nathan and I have had experiences in sport that were less than ideal previously. So to find cycling and find this community that's so open is just a very special thing.
Yeah, it's really great. Like I even look at one of the bike shops I work with, Lanyards, yeah. and they've been so welcoming and yeah. so great to me. Just the whole all the mechanics and all the staff there are so patient with me with the millions of questions I have, or the constant tune-ups that I need on the bike, on the trike, because working on a trike is
complicated, is a
little complicated to say the least. So I'm very, very fortunate to have shops like yeah. Lanyards there for me, but also have a community that's so supportive at the end of the day that really tries to uplift and welcome any rider into it.
Wonderful. We're going to go to ad break right now, but that was a really lovely kind of just general catch up about what's been going on for you the past season.
Hi, this is Dick Valentine from Electric Six. You're listening to CITR 101.9, University of British Columbia. When a problem needs a problem solver, guess who gets the call? Me and Saul. You're tuned in with a black revolver. Guess who dropped the ball? The writing's on the wall. The president's a copper lady, long since standing green. From New York to Los Angeles and all points in between.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM.
Yes, you and I rocking with the best, 101.9 CITR Radio. Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze. Right now you're rocking with Jules Andre Brown, Rolly Rails, Jamal Steels, and Horsepower. You know what it is, right?
Yo, it's Iron Sue, man. I want to shout out Crimes and Treasons Radio, man. CITR 101.9, man. Turn up.
Welcome back. You're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. And I am back here with Nathan Clement, our Paralympic cyclist. Hi.
Hello.
So, your training leading up to Glasgow. I really need to emphasize that I'm still not over the fact that around this time last year, all of these achievements were just like aspirations, and you've like not only like attempted them but crushed them. Like, that's just such an insane thing to me.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's just like, wow, for like really anybody, the ability to visualize something and then achieve it is so impressive. So tell me about your like training leading up to Glasgow. It was like a spring summer season type situation. Did you have any like specific goals in terms of how you wanted to place, or were you like, I'm still so new in my career, I just want to go out there and see what I can do?
It was one of those situations where going into the season, the goal for World Championships was to be within 15 to 20 seconds of the gold medalist in Glasgow and in Scotland. So going into the year at the first race in Maniago, Italy, I was able to get within the goal mm-hmm. right off the bat. And at that point, it's like, okay, we're here now. What can I do to get to that next level?
Did you race like the same people that you did in Italy?
Race against the same people that I did in Italy. Yeah. So then after that, I went to Ostende, Belgium, mm-hmm. and fell within the same 15 to 20 seconds off the gold medalist. And at that point, it's like, okay, we have tangible evidence that I'm within this gap.
Yeah.
How can I make up that time before Scotland? And our third and final World Cup race of the year, as we do three World Cup races in the season, was in Huntsville, Alabama, where kind of everything fell
apart. Place.
Where everything fell apart for me, with a lot of classification drama and body fatigue and dealing with the heat, as I'm someone who does not do well in the heat.
I'm a cold weather racer.
Yeah, I'm exactly a cold weather racer, and knowing that Scotland was going to be cold weather was kind of exciting for me.
That's great.
But from Huntsville, I needed some time to recover my body physically. And from about late May to late June, it was just getting in a rhythm, just trying to find a rhythm again and really build that confidence back on the bike. Then in late June, I was fortunate enough to go to a training camp in Calgary with my coach, Phil Abbott, where he really looked at my bike. We tried to play with what works, what doesn't work, and actually made a bunch of adjustments on the bike and actually took off my left-handed drops.
I saw that.
Just because I never used the drops on my left side. So the drops are on a typical road bike or road trike is the part of the bike that tails down a little bit.
It's so like they got a curve.
Little curve. So I chopped that part off because I never ride there.
Was that like UCI legal? Did they care?
Oh, the UCI made a big deal out of it. As
the UCI likes to make a big deal about sock heights.
But from about late June, we understood what we needed to do.
Okay.
And July was one of the best training blocks I've ever had. Like I was able to bang out 16-hour weeks. For me, with my condition and disability, I didn't realize I could do that at that time. So being able to do that in back-to-back weeks before I went to Bromont, Quebec, where there was a track staging camp, but also a road staging camp where I was the one and only road athlete. So I got to ride with my strength and conditioning coach, Frank Raymond, and just having like a week to train with him and have that kind of company really boosted my spirits and almost helped me in a way step out of my comfort zones riding on Quebec roads because they're not like roads over here in Vancouver. But then getting to Scotland, had about 9 days of prep before the actual race, and that was huge, and just understanding all the intricacies of the road, but also figure out the wind patterns too.
That's a big one. On my like commute to races, I bike two races, I like log the activity and look at the wind, and I'm like, okay, like I'll take drafts in this part and not pull in others, and it's so like minuscule, but it makes such a difference. So after your third World Cup, or the race where you were like, oh, like I've got I'm within a 15 second gap, I can catch them by Scotland, did you change your training plan, or was your coach like, just stick to it?
Stick to it. We made some equipment adjustments, and those equipment adjustments came to be pretty huge at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But I feel like at that point of the year, when I was 15, 20 seconds off them, there's still that area of that's still a lot of time because these are top level riders I'm going up against. I'm going up against guys who've won. One guy's won about 6 Paralympic medals, another guy's won 2 Paralympic golds. Yeah. These are top level riders, and just being able to be within that range is huge on its own. And just no matter what happened in Scotland, it was a great learning opportunity and a chance to just keep developing at the end of the day.
So your coach, Phil, sounds like a wonderful person. I was looking at the like Team Canada cycling coaches, and Phil is not the designated para coach, is he?
Phil works in many capacities.
He seems like kind of the lead coach. Yeah.
He's one of our lead coaches. So we have two main coaches. We have our head coach, yeah. Sebastian Travers, who's based out of Bromont, Quebec. Mm-hmm. And then we have Phil Abbott, who I work with, who's the Western Canada coach, okay. in a way. But he does a lot of other work with the track program, with sometimes with the road program and different disciplines.
So he's kind of like the overseer of the entire
overseer,
cycling.
Overseer, yeah. There's a couple coaches with Cycling Canada that kind of touch base, okay. with a bunch of different programs.
Is there a reason why you worked with Phil and not like the specific para coach? Was it just like distance, location?
I would say Phil is mostly para specific. Okay. At the end of the day, he is the Para West coach, or okay. Canada West Para coach.
Yeah.
And he was my first contact when I tried to get into the sport back, mm-hmm. in 2020. Mm-hmm. And from there, we've been training and working together.
Awesome. It sounds like you've got a real bond.
Yeah. He's a very good guy. He's a good guy. He's a numbers coach, so very, yeah. analytical with, yeah. how he looks at training, yeah. and how he looks at developing an athlete. But since starting in 2020 to where we are now has just been absolutely crazy, and hopefully there's many more years working together.
Yeah, that's really awesome. So the para race environment, I feel like, I don't know, I talked to someone a while back about they had volunteered at the Paralympics, and they were speaking about kind of the environment they experienced with the regular Olympics versus the Paralympics. And they were like, yeah, the Olympics, you know. I feel like para athletes are just, they really encapsulate the spirit of sport so much better than regular, than able-bodied athletes. Like, I don't know how quite to explain it, but I feel like everyone in para is just there because they love sport. Like, there's winning, and then there's all of that, but there's the learning, there's the camaraderie, there's the feeling of being grateful to be able to do this sport. How would you feel you would describe your experience in paracycling, that world so far?
I feel on a couple, there's a couple sides to it, where there's, yeah. the high performance aspect, yeah. where you still have that cutthroat ability.
Absolutely.
Of sport, and hearing stories and even my experiences on the trike and on the bike, it's you're racing against guys or women at top speeds, mm-hmm. and emotions run high from time to time, yeah. but there's that on the bike racing, and then there's the off the bike, mm-hmm. and I feel that there's a great sense of community. But even on the Olympic side too, I was very fortunate to do an Athletes Can conference a few weeks back,
yeah.
in Richmond. And we had many different athletes from, you name the sports, luge, rowing, rugby, on the Olympic and Paralympic side. And there was a real sense of camaraderie there that I've never really experienced before.
Between both para and able-bodied?
Between the Olympic and Paralympic streams, okay. yeah. So it was very, very cool to see how tight everyone's getting. And a lot of the Olympic athletes having questions what the Paralympic athletes do, but also, yeah. us having questions about their sports and really building bonds and building friendships. That is really, really special to see, and seeing, yeah. a tightness of the two streams coming together.
Yeah, I think it's, I think in the past, I think year or so, I've seen a real push for kind of the unification of Paralympics and Olympics. I don't know if you feel that way, but at least the marketing side.
I feel too, there's different strength there, and that's always, yeah. been a topic of conversation, yeah. is unifying the two. Mm-hmm. But also that the Olympic side has many great cultural points of their own and many great stories and aspects of their own sport. But so does the Paralympic side, mm-hmm. too, where's that uniqueness. And there's that point where you want them to get closer and closer, but they also have their very special sides to them,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, and I think those, like, those individual things that make them so unique and special are important to preserve.
Yeah. But what was really cool to see was at the World Championships in Scotland, which was dubbed Super Worlds, because we had pretty well every single cycling event going on in Scotland at that time. So there was mountain biking, there was track, there was BMX, there was cycleball, which is like soccer on bicycles, and then there was the paracycling. So for us, being in Scotland for about 9 days before we actually raced, we were able to watch a lot of the other events on TV. And they combined the para track with the able-bodied track, mm-hmm. as that's the term that's used to describe it. Mm-hmm. And just seeing the environment and seeing how excited people were to see tandem sprints, to see the sea cyclists race and compete really helped unify and bring the two together. And what's going to be exciting, and hopefully I can qualify and be able to race at it next year, is they're going to be combining the able bodies and the paras for world championships in Zurich, Switzerland next year.
Oh, Zurich would be so cool. Oh my gosh, I want to go to Zurich. I'm like considering becoming a groupie just so I can go to these cool places, like the Paris Olympics and Paralympics. It was like, oh, what if I just planned a trip to go watch the Tour de France and then just watch the Olympics and the Paralympics? And then I was like, that would cost $1 million. But that would be so awesome. Is there, like, when they say the road race, they want to combine it, do you mean, like, the group road race or the time trial?
So what would happen is it would be on different days, but it's okay. going to be at the same site. It'll be at the same location as well. So you'll have a lot of those pro tour guys yeah. who you'd see race at the Tour de France or the Vuelta de España or yeah. those major events racing in Zurich, as well as a lot of the para athletes just post the Paralympic Games.
Awesome. So are you going to Paris?
Right now, I'm still waiting on that word that I've fully qualified. Yeah. So no matter what, just continuing to train hard and hopefully get that word sometime in the summer that I've been selected to the Paralympic team.
Awesome. We're just going to go to another break right now, but when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what's happening for you in the future and all of that.
Witness the world's best cinema, meet the creators behind your favorite works, and encounter live shows that combine music and film at the Vancouver International Film Festival. Taking place from September 28th to October 8th, a stellar lineup of over 130 films from 70 countries will transport you to places you've never been. Embrace the magic of cinema with exceptional storytelling that leaves you captivated and inspired. Be in the room as VIFF Live shows breathe life into stories from the screen, combining live performance and cinema. And go behind the scenes with VIFF Talks, connecting you to the brilliant minds behind the work you love. Explore the program and get tickets now at VIFF.org. That's VIFF.org. Student discounts are available, and if you are between the ages of 19 and 25, you can also join VIFF's free U25 membership program.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
In October of 2022, the Vancouver Adapted Music Society held its flagship event, the Strong Sessions, for the fifth time. All Strong Sessions feature a variety of musicians with disabilities, paired with established local artists and bands. Each month until September this year, VAMS will be releasing the performances from our 2022 show on the Reimagine Radio YouTube channel, where you can also find past Strong Sessions content. To stay up to date with us, subscribe to the channel and drop a like to show some support.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM's Accessibility Collective. And I am here with Nathan Clement, a paracyclist. So Nathan, You've got some goals on the horizon. Do you have any like races on your calendar that you're definitely doing?
Right now, I'm waiting on the word to see if I've qualified for the Parapan Am Games coming up in November. So hopefully I get the word soon that I'm going.
Where would that be?
That's going to be in Santiago, Chile.
Oh,
so
I'm so jealous.
So it'd be an incredible opportunity to be able to do a Pan Ams again, as I was very fortunate enough to do it as a swimmer. Mm-hmm. But now to have the opportunity to hopefully do it as a cyclist would be something really, really incredible, and just being able to be down in South America and experience the crowds and the passion that they have for sports. And then from there, it's mostly waiting on their World Cup calendar to start up. So hopefully sometime in 2024 that can get going, and then just get into the full swing of the season. But right now it's kind of that building the endurance and really building solid training habits that are going to hopefully transfer over into the new year.
Yeah, so I think for anybody who does sport, especially an endurance sport, there is kind of like a base season, and that's for cyclists usually the winter season. So that's when you kind of stop doing as many like sprint intervals, and you're not really in your peak fitness, but you're really building that lung capacity and that endurance. So we both live in Vancouver, and it likes to rain a lot here, and it likes to get really gross. How are you feeling about getting back on Zwift? And for anyone who doesn't know, Zwift is like stationary biking indoors while you watch a little character on a screen just go on a fake track.
It's something that I think about every day. Like
It's
coming. It's definitely coming. It's definitely coming. But with Zwift this year, especially for me, and one of the things we're really trying to work on in Paris, paracycling, but also parasport in general, is a lot more opportunities to race and compete.
Yeah.
It gives a great opportunity to race against other people. Having Zwift there, doing like nightly races as...
Yeah. You're going to be Zwift racing?
It's going to do a lot of Zwift racing, but what's cool about the program for anyone who may want to get into cycling but don't want to be outside in the rain throughout the winter is that there's constantly group rides you can do on there, but also little training programs, but also racing too, that you can really test your fitness. And the thing with Zwift racing is usually the starts of the race are pretty intense.
Yeah.
So it's going to be great to try a new side of racing where in a lot of the categories I race against, we like to take our time, just smell the flowers at the start of the race. No one really jumps off the gun at the start, where it's mostly a game of gamesmanship somewhat, where we're just waiting on someone to make that first move. And when that first move happens, it's all chaos from there. But but with something like Zwift, it gives that opportunity to try different tactics, try different moves, and just overall test that fitness. So that's one part of Zwift I'm going to be looking forward to. But mostly, I'm going to try to stick it out in the rain and even in that one day of snow that we get here in Vancouver. And
In February,
yeah. And just really, really try to be outside for as much as I can.
Awesome. You're a better man than I. I've already set up my trainer. I'm ready to just be indoors. So are you kind of waiting to finish your next race before you start to taper into that endurance season?
I feel like right now it's mostly just building that base. We haven't really fully explored what would happen if I do race at Pan Ams yet. We're still waiting on that official word to come in, and then I can
adjust
where I need to. However, right now for me, no matter what, if it's tapering or building that base, there's bunch of technical points I still need to hammer home to really build that strength and build that ability no matter what part of the year I race in.
There's this weird sense of having to let your body recover but never really lose that base fitness, and that's a very tricky line to draw. That's something I'm still really bad at. it feels very all or nothing. So, like, right after you came back, you took, like, a week, 10 days off the bike. And I remember, like, reaching out to you being like, let's go for a ride. And you were like, I have a week off the bike and I'm not stoked about it. Were you, like, riding a high coming back? And you're just like, I just want to train, get better. Like, what was going through your mind then?
Pretty well. As soon as I got back to Vancouver, I wanted to be on the bike right again, and I had to have that conversation with myself of being like, no, you cannot ride, and that's one thing for me, and taking the skills and taking the learning lessons from swimming. One of my major problems that affected my mental health, but also affected my body, was I burned myself out.
I overtrained,
especially after the games too, where my body just needed time away to really rest and recover, and I did not give myself that time. And I felt as soon as I came back to Vancouver, as much as I wanted to ride, I needed that healthy separation from the bike. And it's hard when...
And you literally had to go to a different country to do it.
I had to... I didn't had to, but I wanted to really just explore and travel again, because that was something I'm very fortunate to be able to do and be able to go experience other countries. And I've had the chance to go backpacking in the past.
Yeah.
And as I've gotten a little bit older in life, I've... those years and days are limited where I can fully just grab a bag and go travel somewhere new and somewhere fresh. So while that chance was still there, I decided to go backpacking for just under 2 weeks and explore Central America.
I was like really impressed, because I remember talking to you and you were like, yeah, I've got to take a week off the bike, but I'm not stoked about it. And I was like, there's no way he's actually going to do it. And you did. And I think that like self-restraint is something that, when you told me about the Nathan that was swimming, I don't think that Nathan could have done that.
No.
But this Nathan can.
It's,
and I think you're stronger for it.
I think it's an important learning lesson for any athlete or any real student or someone that, for me, I was very lucky I was able to travel, and many people don't have that opportunity, don't have that chance. But finding something that you can separate from like your work and your passion and giving yourself that healthy separation. Because as soon as I got back on the bike, I noticed right away my watts were already higher.
Yeah.
My cadence, my endurance was a little off, just because I spent 2 weeks trying many awesome foods from Central America. But getting back into that rhythm and feeling that freshness was almost better, almost knowing that taking that time away can create that can only help development going forward too.
Yeah. I finished my season. I think I finished my season like a month early, just because I definitely was physically burnt out. Apparently you're supposed to only increase your hours by 10%. I think I increased by 240%, which is apparently not something you're supposed to do. But I took that last month off the season just because I mentally needed a break. And I was just like, I don't want to ruin cycling. I don't want to get to the point where I get on the bike and I just hate it and I don't want to be doing it. So like having that physical time off, but also mental time off, is so important just to preserve your love for the sport.
That's even the bigger part. And after everything that went on throughout the year in my family's life and my own personal life, with all the drama on the bike and off the bike, having that time to separate, and I feel, because I knew who Nathan the cyclist was, but I kind of turned off Nathan the person.
And that's a really important thing to have.
And that's an important balance, is finding that side of you again, and even just taking that time to let that athlete in you rest. Because an athlete or someone who's driven, whether you're running your own business, trying to go through your school program, or no matter what you're doing, whether you're a musician, you can get so dedicated to your craft that almost taking those steps back, you can really see a fuller picture of what you need and what you want.
I'm just so excited to see what you do in the next year. You're so fresh in your career, and you've already accomplished so much. And, like, I really just hope that you are just going to not just perform on the world stage, but feel like you've harnessed yourself as an athlete. I don't know. It's just so incredible to know someone at such a high caliber of athleticism.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's very kind of you.
And I know that you're such like a local celebrity in Vancouver. I have so many friends that are like, yo, I saw Nathan on the trike around UBC. Like, there's been so many times I've like been across the street from you and been like, oh my God, Nathan, hi. I don't know. It's just insane to know that I train in the same city as someone who has had such a sports journey like you.
But there's so many other athletes here too, and so many emerging athletes or just leaders in the community that are doing their time, doing their work now, and who are going to be big names in months to come, but also years to come too.
Yeah. I saw Evan Dunphy on the bus the other day, if you know who that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, the race walker. Yeah. I didn't talk to him. I thought that'd be weird. But I was like, that's the guy who came second in the 50K race walk, which is an insane distance to race walk.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to meet Evan a couple times, and he was actually at the Athletes Can. And,
okay.
And having someone like that in our community of Vancouver who's such a great vocal leader, but also someone who's, no matter what he says, he'll follow up with action, is very refreshing and almost helps other athletes realize what you need to do and what you need to accomplish to not just be a great athlete, but also be an important figure in building the sports community in your own city, in your own community.
So this question is going to be a curveball for you. Have fun. At this point in your career, do you see yourself cultivating more paracyclists, like young paracyclists, or do you see yourself kind of focusing more so on what you can do for yourself and how you can progress the paracycling community just by performing?
I feel that, and that's a great question. Thank you for asking that.
Curveball accepted.
I really want to help with parasport development.
Because you used to be a coach.
And just sport development as a whole, because I feel there's still so many things that we can do in the parasport community, let alone the paracycling community, to really help that 8-year-old kid, that 10-year-old kid who wants to get into sport for the first time, or someone who just suffered an injury at 25, 30 years old and is trying to figure out what they need, what they want to do in their life. And having opportunities to have shows like this and the opportunities
to try a trike out at a local crit race.
Just to try a trike out or just talk to people. And that's one thing I try to do. I'm a very passionate athlete when I do ride, and I very much sometimes will wear my emotions on my sleeve. But I'm someone that always loves to have conversations and always loves the questions about the trike. And hopefully that can lead to some kid getting into sports, because it's pretty crazy how many times I've been in a bike shop or I've been at a cafe and I've had a parent or I've had just someone ask about the trike, and then I come to learn that they have a kid who's like 5, 6, 7 years old that's not at that stage to try like a bike yet, but wants to try a different sport, wants to try a different activity, and giving that chance to hopefully help fuel the dream, because that's the biggest thing. I've had so many people help me in my own life and in my own journey, and I could list hundreds and hundreds of names of just groups and organizations that's really stood up and fought for me in times that I really couldn't. And if I can only give back just a fraction of that, I would be so grateful, and so it would feel really, really good just to help where they left it, where these past generations left it, and where these organizations put me in these positions to help that next generation really succeed and reach their dreams.
Yeah, I know. I actually just raced Shims in Victoria. So Shims Ride is a race for a former rower turned cyclist who was in a very severe car crash while he was on his bike, and he has a spinal cord injury. And this race raises money for the Praxis Spinal Cord Institute. And at the race, Shim's Ride in Victoria, he did a hand cycle demo. And I just think that really resonates, like what you just said really resonates with someone who's 25 and just has had, just been like told that they have a life altering disability and they still want to do sport. Like there's always a way. And I think it's so important to highlight parasport, because I just feel like there isn't enough visibility for it.
No, and it's continuing to grow, and at the end of the day, it'll never be where we fully wanted to be, but working towards that is something that is going to take generations of athletes, but it's a fight that we're all willing to take on, and having events like Athletes Can, but also having the chance to do events, be on radio shows like this, and just all these ways of getting voices out there and getting stories out there. I was very fortunate last week to do a para climbing or adaptive climbing demonstration at the Richmond Oval with Seamus Boleyn, who is a para climber for the Canadian national team, and just seeing the kind of intricacies of the sport, the technique that's needed, but also the thought and the mindfulness of that athlete is something that you think you know before you go to watch it. But when you're seeing a top level climber like that perform with a blindfold on or perform with one arm, it is really remarkable to see the high performance, to see the decision making that is required, and just having so many other athletes out there in Vancouver, but also British Columbia and across Canada as well, that haven't had their stories told yet, but will have their stories told, is going to be very, very special. And just continuing trying to get these names and these stories out there into the media is going to help grow parasport, but also rights for people with disabilities as well.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm really excited. I'm hoping to actually interview Seamus in the coming months, so stay tuned for that. But thank you so much for coming on and talking, or letting me brag about your recent championship, and telling us about just the crazy year you've had. And I hope you have another equally crazy good one.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have you back on at some point. But everyone stay tuned. Go follow Nathan on Instagram. You'll see his cycling adventure. I'll see you all next week at 6 to 7 on Thursday.
All these falls and shit can't hold me down. I got a craving for success and shit. You say you ball, but I ain't never seen you shine, you bitch. Might not be known now, but just wait until a bitch blow up. I'm talking gourmet and designer with my boots. So what? You talking smack about a scandalous cat? I rip you up with my claws and that's that. We making waves and you finna get wet. I practice gratitude and massive effects. It's the castle of death. Lavender is so blessed. And you act like you don't know me. I believe that we've met. When we in the mood, dodge the shade that you throw and show it back at you. And why she always got an attitude? I don't know. And why she always got an attitude? Really though, I'm really tired of the constant state of push and shove. And so I always got an attitude. That's what's up. Always, always got an attitude. Don't hear it. Always, always got an attitude. Don't say it. Always, always got an attitude. Don't say it. Always, always got an attitude. That's what's up. Yup. Attitude, acting swiftly cause I'm always on the move. Nope, no, I don't know you. So I got an attitude, yup. Yo, I don't play, I won't freeze. We big rolling, we blow trees. I got steez, I got lots. Step onto the stage and they mouths gon' drop. So in love with rap that it off my top. Love it that much, don't think that I could stop. Turn up the volume, cause this shit gon' bop. Turn up the volume, cause this shit don't stop. Yo, and why she always got an attitude? I don't know. And why she always got an attitude? Really though, I'm really tired of the constant state of push and shove. And so I always got an attitude, and that's what's up. And why she always got an attitude? I don't know. And why she always got an attitude?
I'm really tired of the constant state of push and shove, and so I always got an attitude, and that's what's up. That's what's up. Got an attitude, that's what's up. And that's what's up. Now run and tell your people.
Thank you.